Hey, everybody. Frank Wassenberg here. Another episode of the CX Experience. Really excited for today. We have In Contact on the line today. We're actually going to have a really exciting call with them today. I'm looking forward to a lot of it. We asked for Rusty Jensen to join us today for a couple of reasons, actually. One, he's got a really cool title, and his responsibilities are pretty broad within Contact. He's the vice president of revenue generation for them. So we're going to get into a little bit about what that means. But also, Rusty's got some really good perspectives on what InContact's doing as a whole, but also what InContact's doing right in the middle of the pandemic that we're facing right now. So, Rusty, I got to tell you, thanks a lot for joining us. I'm really looking forward to getting a lot out of today.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. Appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Thank you. So you got to tell me, what is VP of Revenue Generation's role? What are you guys doing? What are you doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So VP of Revenue Generation is actually a new title that we just put together and in this role that I just took. And essentially what my role is to help construct pipeline and any net new opportunities across the whole company of NICE. So my job is defined through channels, through direct sales, through self-generation, current customer generation, any kind of pipeline and net new opportunities that are available, and ensure that we have all of those teams working. So I've got the channel organization as well as our direct sales development teams that work for me. And I coordinate with all the different people across the company through marketing and sales and kind of act as a bridge to help make sure that we're building pipeline in the right way. And that's really what I'm focused on.
So are you client facing, or are you kind of strategy wise? Are you one of the broader scopes of strategy, or do you still get a chance to get tactical and get in front of people?
Yeah, so I do both. And I think I'd go crazy if I couldn't get in front of people. So that's my favorite thing to do. But yeah, no, I do both. So a lot of strategy construction around what we're doing in channels, what we're doing in direct and marketing. So I help develop the strategy, but at the same time, I get in the trenches with some of our different channel people, some of the larger partnerships we have, and some of the larger accounts to get in and actually help put the right kind of face on things. I don't know if I've got the right face, Frank, but
well, I don't know. You're talking both. Listen, I'll give you the compliments now just to keep you talking. You look handsome. You look great.
Thanks. I got all dressed up for you. So
yeah, no, I could tell. So did I. You know, it's funny because I could see where you'd probably be pretty comfortable hanging out in your bunker right there. I mean, it looks like your bunker is almost a nightclub. You got a pretty casual outfit, a pretty casual spot right there.
Yeah, absolutely. We got it all smart home activated. I've got an arcade over here with 50,000 games on it.
50,000 cool. games.
50,000. It's awesome. So we'll play little games with my kids or whatever. But yeah, this is my basement. This is kind of the man cave I got going here, and it's a good place to hang out, you know, when you're in a time of crisis.
I can imagine. We're gonna have to talk about that my next trip out to Utah.
Absolutely. Welcome to come.
So listen, you're crossing boundaries with your teams, right? It's actually very interesting to talk about this, right? You cross boundaries with a lot of different teams. So you're seeing people in the 50-person contact center space on up to the 1,000-person and above space. So I'm curious, what are you seeing in terms of commonality in those people and what they need to make a contact center run efficiently? Because a lot of people will say, you know what, I'm a 50-person shop. I don't need all the things a big guy needs. But I'm curious to see what you're seeing to make them all run functionally well.
You know, that's interesting. And that's something that over the years, so I used to run our mid-market division. So I sold contact centers that were 150 contact center seats and below. And one of the things I found to be very interesting is there's this assumption that when contact centers are smaller, that they don't need what everyone else may need. And I think there's some truth to that when you get into very complex deployments, but every contact center has got to do the same thing to be operationally functional. So they have to route contacts, your chats, emails, your calls, et cetera, to the right people. They have to schedule those people and make sure that they're there to receive the calls and that they're following the schedule. They got to make sure they're saying the right things and communicating the way you want to, so that you can then get customer feedback and figure out what your customers think about this experience. And then they have to use all of that data to make change happen in a call center. So they all have to do the same thing. And the technology that they use to do it can get increasingly sophisticated, but that's what you've got to do. You got to route calls. You got to schedule people. You got to make sure they say the right things. You got to make sure you know what your customers think about it. And you got to use that data to make changes to make the contact center more efficient, the customer happier. And so the technology set for even smaller contact centers is oftentimes the same. It's just, it depends on the level of sophistication you need in the product itself.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the level of sophistication is actually an interesting thing for inContact, because you guys are so broad in what you do, and you've done things naturally. You've done through some acquisitions, and you guys have put it all together. So the package is able to be delivered to these people. So I'm curious, what are people asking you for predominantly? You know, let's take a 50-person space. What do you see in their first ask usually be of inContact?
You know, the first ask is always getting the right network connectivity and contact routing installed. Because I think a lot of people think in the contact center space of these different products as different things, because you're dealing with 8 different vendors to do what I described. So you've got one system that's routing, and that's kind of the core. And most of the time, that's where we start, which is routing contacts, integrating into CRM, self-service IVR, and automatically distributing those contacts to agents. That's usually the core. That's number one. And then as we get into that conversation, it just becomes clear. When you say, okay, well, what are you doing to schedule those agents? So now we're routing them effectively. How do we know that they're following their schedules, and how are you doing that? So they're either doing it with Excel, or they're using a different WFM system.
Yeah.
And how are you training these agents, and how are you QAing them? Well, they're usually, well, we use a different QA tool that we use, and that's how we do it. And you're like, okay, well, how do you check your customer sentiment? Do you have speech analytics? Do you have survey tools? They're like, yeah, we got SurveyMonkey, and we've got, you know,
something or other that we band-aid together.
Yeah. And then you find out they got 8 systems. And when you start implementing it, you realize, okay, all these things have to jive together. They got to work together. And it starts getting a little bit messy until you put it into a product, right? Into a suite. And that's relatively new.
Yeah. And you're talking a little bit about fixing what's wrong, but with the tools that you guys have. You're talking a little bit about how to adjust on the fly, but you're also talking about effective measuring and effective changes. Because what I've seen is a lot of times people will get kind of stuck. They'll get kind of comfortable with their reports, their KPIs, and they don't have the ability to make change. They don't have the ability to dynamically route. They don't have the ability to say, you know what, I can improve 3 or 4 or 5% by just making one tweak that no one's going to know about. Right. And there's probably some tools that you guys have built that'll allow people to do that pretty quickly.
Absolutely. Well, and without breaking everything else. So that's where you start getting into trouble, is when you start making changes where you're like, okay, this, if I just change the way this is routed and distributed, and I send these contacts to a different group who I know process it faster, we can improve efficiency, as an example. But sometimes when you do that and you change the way you route, or you change the skills with which you're distributing, it affects the way you schedule. Because now that you've added a new skill, now you have to go add a new skill in your scheduling tool, and you have to account for the scheduling and adjust your algorithm. And then when you make that type of a change, then you have to adjust how you report on it, right? And how you weight data. And it's interesting how you can build a tool that's so simple to make a change in the cloud, like inContact's routing tool, so simple. But when you make that change, how does it cascade down the line and affect you operationally? It's interesting how it does affect people, which is why a singular product that all functions together helps a lot. Because when you're cobbling together a lot of systems, you open up a lot of weakness.
Yeah, and you start talking now about, like, I actually like the word, the cascading effect, right? Because it does, can cascade for a while. So a change to a skill affects your WFM. A change to your WFM can affect your QM. A change to your change to the QM will affect your ability to adjust on the fly and make changes and service the customer. And then that affects all of your measurements and all of your bonuses potentially.
Absolutely.
Now, what do you think? Let's take that now. So you've got this conversation that you're having with a client, and universally the goal is exceptional customer service, right? Exceptional client services. What do you consider good customer service? What do you consider the positive customer experience? Like inContact as a whole probably says, we have a philosophy on how to deliver that, but what do you consider that? What do you look at for that?
Well, I think good customer experience, I think it's best measured by the amount of loyalty that you can get from a customer. So they walk away from any interaction, or they look at the partnership as a whole, and they're essentially an 8 or a 9 on a scale of 10, or they're very satisfied and they say, you know what, that is a great experience. It's an experience they get excited about. So let me tell you about jeans, pair of jeans.
Okay, I'm in.
So I'm always wearing a pair of jeans. I don't think I'll show you on the camera, but
I appreciate that.
They're Salvage Anarchy jeans. They are $116.73 from Buckle. I buy them every time. I love them. I recommend them every time because I'm a very satisfied customer. I love these things. It's like wearing a pair of clouds, right? Uh-huh. And the successful customer experience is that every time I've bought from there, every time I've taken these jeans, I've gotten a great product that I'm very satisfied with that I want to share with others. So successful customer experience is when you can get your customers to evangelize you and say, this is a great product. This is a great company. And that loyalty is what determines great customer experience. Now, how you deliver that is somewhat unique, but that's what's great customer service. Because if you bought a pair of jeans from Walmart and they say, well, do you like your jeans? Yeah, they're good. How much did they cost? I can't remember. Where'd you get them? It was like Walmart or Target. I'm not sure. That's not an advocate, right? Of course, if they hate your product, they hate it. But if someone can really love on your product and evangelize for you, that's good customer experience. So at least that's the result.
You're actually taking it to a different degree. You're looking at it from what used to be an old kind of paradigm where a happy customer will tell 3 to 5 people, an angry customer will tell 10 to 12. But now you're shifting it to any chance they get, they're going to evangelize about your product. Now, you've probably never called customer service for your jeans, right? You've probably never had to call them for service, but you're getting any chance you can, because if you did, you're already happy with the product. So the experience would be better. So now you have a chance to capitalize if that person's ever calling you, not to lose that good feeling. So it shifted really from what I'm hearing your story is, it's shifted now from customer service to not losing an advocate, not losing an evangelist if they ever had to call in.
That's right. Because customer experience is broad. It's their total perception of how they view you as a company. So in the contact center, you want to look at things like transactional customer satisfaction. So were you very satisfied? Were you dissatisfied? Were you, you know, what was your rating for that experience? But you also want to look at the net promoter score. So you want to ask a series of questions and understand what's your total perception of the company as a whole in all the different ways that you're engaging with us. And when you understand if they're a true promoter, if they score, an 8 or 9 out of 10, or excuse me, a 9 or 10 out of 10, that is someone who's going to push and evangelize for your product. You want to create as many of those people as you can. So when it gets to a contact center, that's the critical time. It's an issue. It's a problem. This is the time to prove yourself as a company. This is your voice. This is your front line. And let's make sure you're executing exactly the way that you would expect it to be done. You know, we want that executive vision on how we treat customers to come through the agent's voice. And that's a challenge.
And that's very okay. So interesting point, right? And I like that. So the way you're going is cool, right? You want that to come through the agent's voice. You want there to be, so that's not just, I'm here 9 to 5. I got to take my job. I got another pain in the butt customer calling me. That's not that. That's entirely different thing. Now you want these people empowered to make a difference. You want these people to want to make a difference. You want these people to want to do something for you and the business that they normally probably wouldn't be desirous of doing, but now you're driving them to it. So do you think that comes from them being empowered? Do you think that comes from them trying to drive change, buying into the company mission? Where do you think that desire for the agent to come out in their voice comes from?
You know, that's it. That's the interesting thing is, Simon Sinek wrote this book, Starting with the Why. You know, why are we doing what we're doing? And you have to be able to incentivize and motivate agents to want to do it at that level. So not only are we training and enabling them and making sure that they're doing it, you also need to incentivize them and drive them to focus on engaging in the metrics that matter and engaging with customers in a way that matters. So what we do to help affect that, because I think it's very important, is the ability to automate incentivization and create gamification around their performance statistics, around their QA scores, around how quickly they manage calls, around their customer sentiment and the levels of customer sentiment that they have, And you can put it in a reporting tool with us that will allow them to be incentivized and to gamify it. So they earn badges, they earn coins. There's a store inside of the reporting application where they can buy incentives or a free parking spot or a day off. And they actually start investing. You can give them a pet, right? And if you don't hit your metrics, your pet's not healthy, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, there you go. That's the hit.
There you go. So you put it, what's in it for me, but you also put it in as a why, as a general cause. So you help them understand the cause, and then you help them understand what's in it for them, and you automate it. It's amazing the difference a performance management tool makes. It's amazing.
So, yeah, you know, I would say, so you're changing the entire experience, the entire conversation, right? By doing that for an agent, you've now enabled them to be more powerful. You've enabled them to be driven towards the company goals, and they're right. Buying into the vision. I think that's probably a big motivation that people miss the why of what we're doing. Obviously, I've seen Simon as well. Simon's got his act together. Yep. He's got a good speech, you know, got a good spiel. Now it's a matter of how do you translate that downhill? And that comes from, I think, effective managers are able to do that very well.
Yep.
And sometimes contact center managers need to have better tools and better vision so that they can adopt these kinds of ideals.
Which kind of puts it into a big secret sauce, which is, can you, because there's a lot of complexity in a contact center and you're balancing some very strong forces with limited budgets. You're balancing the cost of customer engagement against customer experience. You always have to drive it up and you have to drive the cost down because service centers are a cost center. You know, if I call about my jeans, the company's losing money, right? Because I'm making that call. And so it's a hard thing to balance. And if supervisors don't have the right systems all tied together, and they have to spend all this administrative time and all this time on reporting and all this time on every repetitive task that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter, like getting involved, like supervising the agents, working with them, coaching them, incentivizing them, and working on that side of the strategy. It makes it difficult to win. And that's what we want to do, enable supervisors to do their real job, which is to make customers happy and make employees happy and productive.
So you go down two roads. You go down two roads there. So one's probably the introduction of a little AI to make it a little more powerful. Then the other one is the reinvestment in the workforce, right? We had a conversation the other day in which people talked about empowering the agents and turning them, getting the organization to buy into, are the agents a cost center for you or a revenue generation center for you? So I would challenge you that in the example of those genes that you mentioned, if you call into that, maybe it does cost them $3-4 for that agent to spend a minute or two on the phone with you, right? Sure. But if that experience is bad, you're not buying another pair of jeans. And you're going to say to somebody, they're a nightmare. There was a problem, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But now you have the opportunity to be like, no, not only do I love the jeans, but I called in because something broke. They sent me a free pair, a repair kit for the other one, and a seamstress to my house, and it's all fixed and it's all great.
Yeah,
now they've generated revenue for you because you're going to go buy 10 pairs.
That's exactly right. And statistically, if you look at it on average, and it actually applies to a surprising number of industries, but on average, someone who is a product is usually going to generate 4 times more the revenue that they're currently spending. So they're going to do it because they buy more, they refer their friends, and they don't leave. So on average, if somebody's a 9 or a 10, as in the NPS score, they're going to generate 4 times the revenue. And it works the opposite way. If they're really dissatisfied, they're going to deter around 4 times the revenue.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
It's real revenue generation. It's for companies to track sometimes, you know, because it's a little bit like happy customers. How does that translate to revenue? Building a really good plan in the contact center to calculate that and track it is huge. It's huge. But usually it's a pretty sophisticated move. And you got to solve a lot of other problems first before you can start thinking that way.
Now, do you guys, because I want to get back to the AI portion of that thought before, but have you guys built any tools or in your partnership ecosystem, have you built any tools that allow that measurement to happen? Have you done anything on that front?
Yeah. So to kind of tie into AI, so let's look at how some of this works. But we have a lot of tools that help to do it. So the first thing is how do we open up enough budget to save the company enough money to start investing in their employees in this way?
Sure.
So some of the way that you do that is by creating a customer experience with any kind of self-service. So self-service is very helpful, and AI is really changing that entire landscape. And in fact, AI is going to change the way we all function over the next, 10, 15 years. We will become very dependent on it.
I'm a Tesla guy. I'm a Tesla guy. I think the stuff's going to take over the world, man. I don't mess around with it.
It's awesome. But so some of the ways that AI works. So just as a concept on what AI is, just to be clear, because everybody says, I've got AI. This system's AI or AI.
It's going to do it all for me and bake it.
But really what AI is the biggest difference is there are most software programs and technology is a logical flow. So in a contact center, if I call and I select in the IVR, I want to talk about billing. So I want to talk about my cell phone bill. And I press 1, and it's going to route me to someone who does billing. That's a logical workflow. AI is different because what AI does is it takes all of the available data it can consume, like information about you in a database, as well as any information about your knowledge base on how you solve problems as a company. And when somebody submits a request, like through a chatbot, as an example, they will write in a chatbot and say, I am calling because I want to talk about my cell phone bill. And what it's able to do is it's able to make a determination based on available data. So it's not a workflow, it's a determination. So this machine learning is, here's all of the available options. And here is the question that's being asked. And not just the keywords, but they use engines like Microsoft's or IBM's Watson or Google's AI to understand what you're asking through natural language processing. What are you actually asking for? Not just keywords. And then it searches the database and comes up with the very best possible option. It predicts what's the best answer and it gives that answer. And by doing that, it's not just a logical flow, which is, here, I want to ask questions about my bill. What it looks at is, this bill's overdue. It's 3 days overdue and it's higher than normal. And because it's higher than normal, we're going to call and ask about the extra charges. So it says, are you want to ask particularly about the extra charges of this and this, right? That is a way more powerful interaction than, here, let me show you what your bill is. Make sense?
Sure.
So AI, so it's something that,
like, we all hate IVR. Like I hate IVR. Like I hate having to speak into something because I always feel like it's just giving me something to do until an agent comes on the phone. Right. And that's the poor experience. What you're saying is you guys are trying to change the game a little bit to say, by this interaction, I'm truly going to reroute you differently. So I'm going to look at this and say, yeah, I'm registering your voice. But AI is looking back into the system to say, these are metrics and gates that have been checked. Now we can route him better to somebody with more intelligence.
That's right. And then beyond that, so the next level. So then we collect all this information up front. The next level, if we do need to take it to an agent, this is a very cool product. So we have behavioral-based routing. So it's predictive behavioral-based routing. And what it does for, and this is for large contact centers, typically. Okay, but it's very cool. It will actually ask a patron specific questions and look at how they interact and ask them actually personality-based questions about their preferences. And it will store and save their preferences. And then we also ask the same kind of personality questions to agents. And the system will actually identify the personality of the person who's calling based on past history and questions and match them with the personality of an agent. So actually when they connect you, not only are they routing to the right person who can solve the problem, they're routing to someone who has a good personality fit so that when they actually have the interaction, it's a better engagement.
Yeah, there's the disc. Like Frank Wassenberg's not for everybody, so don't send him something. But you've got analytical people who want to speak to analytical people. You've got gregarious people who want to talk to gregarious people. There's a personality match there that you guys are building. That's actually really, really sweet.
Very cool.
What have you seen a major adoption in that in the large contact centers? And have you seen a metric by which you're saying this person called in last time? He didn't buy anything. Now that we use this, this person's buying something.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of use cases and case studies of deploying these types of systems where you have significant improvement in customer experience and cross-sell upsell rates. So pretty significant impact when it's deployed and deployed right. And it, you know, it requires a lot of information. It's a lot of work to invest in, but the companies making this, these investments are seeing the ROI.
Big time. I'd love to see that. Even if after this, we can get that sent to me.
Sure.
Because what I'd like to do is I'd like to show that. I'd like to show where those bars are. Let me see that bar graph and, you know, pre, post implementation, this engagement, what happened good, what happened bad. I'd be really interested to see that for people.
It is cool.
Yeah.
I can share some information for you. And then the next level.
Go ahead. Let me hear.
I was just to say the next level of AI that we're using is an application called Neva. And it's for robotic process automation inside of the company. And it's a virtual desktop assistant. So an agent's working on their computer and essentially the screen will pop up and the AI is looking for what they're doing on the screen and what they're doing in the systems. And it will basically say, are you trying to execute this task? So are you trying to put in a case order? Yes. And it says, great. And then Neva will ask like a chat bot. It'll ask like three or four questions to the agent. And then it'll say, do you want me to execute this task for you? And they hit yes. And then it goes into the system, fills out all the fields. It sends the appropriate communication to trigger workflows. And it actually starts communicating and engaging inside the company and filling out information. So it cuts the agent work time by sometimes 3/4 of the work is just cut out. And then on the back end, it will update systems and modify information. It can even say, do you want me to send an email update to your customer? Yes. And it will write an email with all the relevant information and send it to a customer for it. It's really cool.
I love that. So now you're talking about, so AI used appropriately is enhancing the agents. It's bionics, right? It's not AI, right? You got the $6 million man now, if I'm going to date myself, but you're enhancing that agent's capabilities now. You're taking that agent from doing rudimentary tasks to getting to shifting that to servicing the client and keeping the engagement going with the client while that other stuff just happens in the background. You don't have to deal with it.
That's right. So the agents are focusing on people, right?
Yeah, they just love this.
They'll love it. And it cuts the cost, right? It you know, if you're saving 3/4 of their time, you're saving a ton of money. So when you think about that, that's where you can start investing more in the customer and you can get loyalty out of it. And
absolutely,
you know, people love it.
Now,
they love it.
No, that's huge. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, if I'm with you and I'm speaking with you and I know you're engaged, there's nothing more that I like less than the opposite, which is I hear somebody typing, I hear somebody doing things, I hear somebody talking to their manager in the back, and I'm like, I'm going to have to explain this all over again.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to talk to this person 3 times. And then when they escalate the issue to somebody, because I never take no for the first time, or I never take my first answer if I don't get the answer I like, now I know they're going to have to explain it over again. This seems like you're using all those tools that even the client journey map is way more enhanced.
One thing I want to make a comment on too, Frank. Yeah, it's good. I want to just make a quick comment on it. These are sophisticated systems. You know, the chatbots, the robotic process automation talk about. I mean, they're sophisticated systems, and they require kind of a lot of foundation to be installed.
I mean, automation is key, right? We all agree. You have to automate certain things. You have to get the rudimentary tasks out of the way. You have to build on this so that entire process is easier, right? And that goes back, not just enabling the agents, not just empowering the agents, but really investing in them so they're able to do their job without all the nonsense. It's like running a sales team. You don't want a sales team who spends a half of their day doing CRM updates, doing funnel updates. You know, it's kind of the same thing. You want these people doing what they're best suited to do.
Absolutely. And you want them invested in it.
Yeah, I mean, and I see, listen, a lot of that, I mean, listen, QM is important. I don't want to take too much time on QM because we've spoken about that in the past. We've talked about what it can be, what it can do. But the route you're going is impressive because even a smaller contact center that's 75 or 150 or 300 can use these things to make them better. Even just knowledge management, right? You know, common objections popping up. The person's saying this, don't let them off the hook unless they say this. Well, the person says this. This is what they said the last time. This is how it ended the last time. It's pretty cool just to empower those guys to do their job better, giving them more arrows in the quiver.
It's awesome. It is good stuff. And the roadmap is amazing. You know, some of the things that we're doing to help enable that is really, really cool. It's really cool.
What's on the roadmap? Where do you guys see yourself in the next couple of years? Because I see, I see in contact as you know, a leader in the space, obviously, but I don't hear a lot. I never hear a lot. You guys sometimes are closed-lipped about it. Sometimes you're open about it. I'm very curious to see what the roadmap looks like for you guys.
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. And I think in terms of how it works is we have spent the last several years just unifying the basic platforms, you know, the routing, the scheduling, the QA, the analytics, et cetera, just unifying the platforms into a product, which is where most vendors today are. So they're trying to figure out how do we build like a product. But what we're doing now is we're taking all of these speech analytics engines that we've built and that we have, and we're infusing analytics into all of our different types of products, into analyzing text communication and digital, analyzing voice patterns and recognitions, at putting all that data in there so that we can actually use it for AI, and we can start notifying agents and supervisors in real time when things are happening or when things are trending away from where they want it to be, to essentially become more of that, you know, that core, right? That helps aid the agent, right? It's really agent aids. And that's kind of where the direction that we're moving to make it simple. But to kind of think about some of those tools is enhancing things like IVR, like biometric speech recognition. So you don't call a call center and say, hey, this is Frank. Okay, give me your date of birth, give me your address, it's just so frustrating. You do it in the IVR, then you have to, it'll recognize your voice print and know it's you biometrically. So you can move right to solving the problem. So that tool, real-time authentication, is being deployed. You have voice bots that are starting to be developed for self-service IVR, where it feels like you're almost talking to someone. So you have a self-service voice bot that you're interacting with.
You guys got to get Liam Neeson to do the voice for that thing. That's the key. Yeah. You got to get him to recognize the voice, man. That's the best.
That's right. Do not hang up this call.
Yeah, you got to get Liam Neeson to do it. That'd be great.
But see, that's kind of the direction we're going, is to kind of build tools like that make it easy. But speech analytics and understanding customer intent and understanding where they are in real time helps an amazing amount. So that's a lot of what we're focusing on, as well as digital.
So digital, are you talking digital in terms of social, or are you talking digital? Like, what do you mean when you say digital?
So contact centers are very transactional, right? So you call, it's a call, the call's sent, it's processed. You know, you take everything one at a time. And the way that people communicate and they like to communicate is a lot more like your SMS on your phone. You go on your phone, you can see a full history of every interaction you've ever had, every file you shared, every image, everything. And you want to be able to text and communicate more like instant messaging. Uh-huh. So what we're deploying is a whole series of digital channels. So we can do 30 different digital channels, your chat, email, your social media communication, SMS messenger tools. Things like just different messenger platforms, et cetera, that exist.
WhatsApp and route them, something like
agents.
That.
Agents. Yeah. Or like a WhatsApp, whatever. And when you put it in the tool, if you can treat it like a live connection, so it feels more live. It's not a singular call, but every time it comes in, you see the full history of all interactions that have ever happened. You see the communication, the sharing, you can even say the way that people are saying things in their history. And you can see how they interact. And suddenly you become connected to a customer digitally, differently than placing a call. It's almost like when you want to communicate with somebody internally at your company, you just look at Microsoft Teams. Are they online? Yep, they're online. I'm just going to start talking to them now. And where we're going in terms of contact center is connecting companies and their consumers in a way that's more live, that's more real. Like a text message string or like an instant message string where I'm available to help you. Just start IMing me. That's really where we think things are going from
that's
a digital
massive.
Communication. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's massive. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, that's, if I had my dishwasher that broke the other day, if I had the ability just to SMS the last agent or text the last agent I worked with and just start talking with a guy and be like, this freaking thing, blah, 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 and get a call back or a text back, that'd be unbelievable.
That's awesome, right?
I love that. I jump all over it.
Yeah.
I buy that brand of dishwasher all the time.
That's right. I've got my Samsung guy. You know?
Yeah, I got my guy. Don't worry, I got a guy. Yeah, guy. I'm a New Yorker. I live to say I got a guy.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's how you want it to feel.
I got to tell you, you take a look at this conversation now, and you've said the next level is social interaction with people on a personal level. I mean, that's reaching people where they want to be reached, how they want to be reached.
Yeah.
And I would love it just to get, like, if all of a sudden I got a text message 3 months later from that same agent being like, hey, Frank, I fixed that. Just making sure it's still working. Those parts were good. Or, hey, Frank, the RMA didn't come through yet. Are you going to send that part back or did you use it? Oh, you know, I didn't send that back. Let me get that sent back. That's amazing.
And then when you think about the AI that's infusing it all, right? The way to make that possible is sometimes you have to automate that. Sometimes you have to have a system like Neva that can look at the situation and realize, hey, Frank didn't reply for the last 3 days. I'm going to go ahead and just send an automated message that says, hey, but it looks like it's coming from you. It's personalized. And then if you start interacting, it automatically transfers to an agent. You can communicate. So some of that automation will help make it cost effective.
I love it. I love it. Now let's take a look at that. So you've got, you can measure now the financial impact of that. You can measure now the CSAT scores or whatever terminology you want to use for basically the happiness of the client. You're mapping out the client journey. You guys have got the whole thing kind of figured out here for the next generation. It's actually pretty sweet.
It's cool.
Yeah, it is. It's really neat. Now let's backtrack then, because I don't want to keep you too long today, but I do want to ask some questions around where we are today, right? I think what we saw was a lot of people somewhat unprepared for a shift like we just seen with the pandemic that we're in the middle of, right? So
yeah.
9/11 was a unique type of situation. Sandy was a unique type of situation, again, speaking from our side of the country, in that it happened, DR kicked in, people could go to a facility, and within a relatively decent period of time, people were able to get back to some place to do work. This is almost like a slow motion version of that. This is almost like watching this same thing happen with ripples that you just didn't see in those situations. I mean, I don't think companies were prepared for a quarantine lockdown where people can't leave their house. I'm in New York. I can't leave my house. You're in Utah. You can't leave your house. You know, how are you guys responding to this? Where are you guys taking it to the next level for people?
You know, we've worked for the last, 10 years trying to figure out how to present this message of we're in the cloud, we can deploy this type of technology, we can give you disaster recovery. And everyone kind of views it, not everyone, there's people who are prepared, but a lot of people view it as, why would I invest a lot of money to prepare for something that, may or may not happen? It's kind of that idea. And with contact centers being a cost center, it's hard for them to make that shift. Yeah. So there are a lot of platforms operating on aging systems that don't function super well. And what's happened is this crisis has come up, which is not the first. You had Hurricane Sandy, you had Hurricane Harvey, you had, 9/11, you have this COVID-19, there'll be more situations. And you don't expect that you can just get up and walk away and redeploy your contact center at home. But I can tell you that you want the type of flexibility to be able to say, all right, we have desktop computers. Let's buy 1,000 Chromebooks and send our agents over home over the weekend and have them log in uninterrupted. We had customers that did that. So buy some Chromebooks, go home, deploy. In another scenario, we had situations where companies and government entities just aren't prepared. So what do you do? How do you deploy an active and functional contact center? And so we've had several states, many government entities, many corporations come to us after we published our program to help, which is to turn contact centers up in 48 hours. So regardless of size, come to us, we'll get you live at home in 48 hours. And we deployed thousands and thousands of agents that way because companies weren't prepared. And I think the message isn't so much about this situation, it's just these things happen. And as a business, we need to be able to send our agents home and create continuity in our business experience that keeps the customer service level at the same level, keeps our agent performance at the same level, allows us to be flexible so it doesn't hurt our business so much. Because there are contact centers, Frank, that are shutting down. You know, there's an article on MSN. They just, you know, agents are just not available because we can't put their health at risk and be able to stay open, and our technology is not working. You know, that on-prem system with a VPN and a triple authentication, and we log it all in and we get connected, and then we find out that, great, I can route a call now, but now I can't schedule my people and I can't get them invested. I mean, this all this pain.
Yeah.
We want to avoid it.
And that's a failure. I mean, that's a shame, that failure. I mean, it's like you look 10, 12, however many years ago you want to go back and see, you're having a hosted VoIP conversation all over again. You know, I'll really date myself, but if you start talking about hosted VoIP and where it was, that's verbatim what people were saying about phone systems 12 years ago. And people just couldn't get into the cloud fast enough after 9/11, after Sandy, because Sandy was great. Sandy was great for the experience of, we have this hardened facility. We'll be up and running in 24 hours, but then nobody can get there. So it's great. You have this huge monument to redundancy built, but no one wants to get in their car and drive there because there's trees everywhere. And now you're talking about the same thing. It's like, you guys didn't shift after that. You still haven't made that shift to some sort of giving people the ability to work out of their house. That's a failing. I mean, it's a miss. It's a huge opportunity miss. And to go out of business solely because you can't keep your people in their house is crazy.
Well, and the thing is, too, is I know it's a very hard thing to do. So your contact center is your lifeblood. It's your front lines. You can't put it at risk. And so we know it's a very difficult thing to want to make that type of shift. But when you can make that shift from 8 vendors to 1, when you can make a shift where you go to a platform that's designed to be and functions as if it's always remote in the cloud, if you can make that change to make that deployment happen and then build a good plan to optimize your teams to generate an ROI, it's going to pay dividends long term. But we know it's a difficult thing to do. So I'm not saying that people are completely irresponsible for not doing it. They're trying to balance the difficulty, but it matters.
I agree. I mean, listen, that's the reason I have a job, candidly, right now. This is a challenge, right? Shifting to a CCaaS environment is not easy. Shifting to a CCaaS environment isn't just, like everyone says, flipping a switch. You've got dependencies, and even the things you're talking about, you got thousands of agents up in 48 hours. That just means you got them up.
Yeah.
You know, now you can take calls, which is a function we talked about earlier. You can get calls in and out, but now you've got dependencies, you've got inventory systems, you've got CRMs, you've got all these things you got to start bundling and tying together. And I think FUD, you know, I hate the term FUD, but it's still a thing. It's still a thing. This fear, uncertainty, and doubt that people have around, I don't know what I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to impact by doing this, is a real thing for people. It's really a concern around, listen, this is revenue generating. I have to move forward with this, but I just don't know who's the right one. I don't know if InContact's telling me the truth or a competitor's telling me the truth or whatever. I don't know what they're saying because I've never done it before. So there's an experience gap, there's a knowledge gap, there's a comfort gap that all plays into the role of this. But it did show that people did get caught with their pants down right now.
Yeah.
We're talking about, not to go back to your jeans analogy, but that's what it is.
That's right. It is. And by the way, we're happy to help them. You know, we're happy to help.
Of course. But I think sales guys get a bad rap for that. Sales guys get a bad rap for that because everyone looks at that statement of we're here to help as like we're here to take from you. But yeah. I really think good salespeople build a conversation with people and have that flow where it's like, no, we are. We're here to do this for you. There may be some other guys that do it, but let me tell you why I do it well. But even that, like, you've probably seen it now. You're probably on all the distribution groups from emails from industry magazines and the like. How many of those emails have you seen come out to you that say, 48 hours will have you up, or free trials and stuff like that? It's probably, people are swimming in it right now.
Yeah, all the time. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, just on sales philosophy, not to kind of derail it, but I think technical sales has to change. Salespeople have to level up and become business people. And there's certain circumstances where you have certain salespeople that possibly create like a bad image. But we really need to look at it from a sales perspective. And a lot of the people that I work with in my company is we have to level up and just become a help and an aid to companies. We need to be experts. We need to be people who understand it, who know what's going on, and we can help companies accomplish objectives and help them through those projects and not so much just selling and here's an offer and buy quickly and we drop the price. And it's got to be more of a conversation where we help them achieve specific goals and objectives and talk about goals and objectives, not features, functions, goals and objectives. How do we get you to where you want to be? And that's where sales has to move as a group.
No, I agree. I think I agree.
I think it'll help build bridges. It'll help build bridges as people do.
Yeah, because like you talk about that, you know, I like where you're going with that, because salespeople inherently want to get out there and want to get in front of people and want to talk to people. But some of these conversations are about they stay in the product and they're not able to go to the impact of the product. They're not able to go to the business transaction of the product. That's candidly where our specialty is. We really have that ability to say, I can talk to the CFO about the impact this is going to have to the CIO and talk to the CIO about the impact this is going to have to the CMO and the CMO down to the contact center agent. If you can't have that flow of a conversation, you've lost buy-in here. You've lost buy-in along the chain and you lose people. And I think that's where, especially in the agent community, a lot of people struggle in that impact and that understanding how that's going to impact one group to the next. So let's talk about, let's finish it up. I mean, is there anything that you want to talk about at the end here? Is there anything that you think about that, any last thoughts on either where in contact's going, what you guys are looking at from a prospect of this is an ideal customer for us? I mean, I don't want to give you such a softball at the end, but probably, you know, where do you see you guys making the biggest impact in the coming months?
Yeah, I mean, NICE in contact, you know, any contact centers that are well established, that are, you know, basically 30, 40 agents or more, we can make a huge difference for. And we can do it in a way that helps them to get all the blocking and tackling done in a product, not in eight. We can do it at a price point that makes sense. And we can help customers make a smattering of different solutions into a singular platform that can actually solve the problems they need to solve, blocking and tackling. And then we're a great partner long-term. Once that's done, we're a great partner to help you really optimize and really create a cutting edge experience. That's where we're going to shine. And I know that some people feel like, hey, maybe I need a little less. You can buy as much of it as you want. But at the end of the day, we got to solve these that's happening. We got to schedule people. We got to know what our customers think. We got to be able to make change happen. We got to get our agents invested. We got to do these things. And we can help solve that very easily in a way that others they can't. And as a company, we want to be a solution and a partner. We don't want to just sell technology and scrape money off the top. We want to actually solve problems. We want to lead in this market. We want to be known for something. And that's really our focus.
No, I agree. I think when you get to that point, listen, being known for something is great. Being known for being a leader is great, but also being known as being effective is really probably the best thing. And I think that's probably where InContact earns its stripes, is about being effective for the conversation that we're having. I mean, that's why we call this the CX experience. You want to be effective within that CX experience. And I think that's where you guys are really making a big, powerful play in that and being effective. So, I mean, Rusty, listen, I got to tell you, I could probably spend another 2 hours talking to you. And I want to get into the 50,000 games in that one system, because I do want to know about that later on. But I thank you for your time. And I really look forward to reserving the right to call you back in the next time we want to have a conversation with you.
Exactly.
Awesome. Thanks, man. I look forward to getting you again.
Hey, thanks. We'll talk soon.